Welcome to Fear the Boot bonus episode 26. And my fellow hosts have gotten on me for doing this repeat intro, but it has been so long since we've done a bonus episode that I'm going to do it again.
You know what? This might be my first bonus episode.
Chris, shut up.
Wow, for Chris, anyone, it is. You've been on it for what, a year?
For we're gonna pop Chris's and Pat's cherry.
Nice.
For anyone,
you know, it didn't sound like
that is tuning in for the first time.
There's my bedtime story. Continue, Dan.
For anyone that's tuning in for the first time, we are normally a role-playing game podcast that's edited and all
Oddly
kinds of
similar
stuff.
Similar to mine.
But the bonus episodes are just a mess. So if you're looking for a real sample of what the show's like,
booger. Actually, I think I've made that booger joke before.
This is not it.
It's unedited.
So, I remember seeing that episode when it aired originally.
Do I make that booger
Everything
joke every
we've
time?
Said on that show, we've said before like 8 times.
Sure.
This is Fear the Boot. We're in our 3rd year now.
This would be Fear the Boot in Cincinnati, I guess,
All
in
right.
that case.
Booger. By popular demand, Fear the Boot Bedtime Stories 3. So here's what I want you to do. Even if it's like 11 a.m. during the workday. I want you to tuck yourself into bed, get whatever cuddly animal you prefer, teddy bears.
Get your plush mech.
Stuff lion, plush mech, if you have one right, man. I'm curious where the hell you got it.
Because you want one too. You want a plush war.
I've shown you my plush clap virus, haven't I, Dan?
I want a plush marauder. I am not as big a Warhammer fan as I am a marauder. But here's
Warhammer
what
rocks, man. Yeah, I'm sorry, Dan. You're just wrong.
If you got to compare the two, you got to pick the Warhammer. The Marauder never had good leg armor.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Even the bonus episodes
revolve
around mech
armor. Locusts don't need leg armor. They move 12 hexes.
The Warhammer never had good armor either.
The Kurita one did.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah, but they're snakes.
This is not. That's
why we
proper
steal
term is
them.
Japanese American.
You know, I've got to say, I've got to have you take back what you said in the beginning. You know, that this is not a good example of what Fear the Boot's all about. Pretty much this is exactly what we always talk about. We're already talking about Battletech.
All right. I know, but just like every other episode. In this episode, hold on a second. Like, in this episode, I could talk about carrying Dan and have Mike dragging in the sand.
So this is a bad...
Again, that's just what gets edited out of the regular episodes.
So, Pat, you're saying it's a bad time to bring up that both my stories are about Battletech?
No, I'm just saying it's what
gentlemen, this is for the listener.
We're supposed to be settling down.
I am like the Delilah of the show.
Just be.
What you guys need to do is take your favorite plushie, a fluffy pillow, a warm comforter, cuddle up in bed, turn this on the speakers, your headphones, and set them next to you, and listen to these bedtime stories as we slowly put you to sleep.
As if 4 hairy, unattractive men, 5, were laying next to you and speaking in harsh voices, laughing at themselves.
Listen, John, as a person who slept with both Dan and Chris at sci-fi conventions, I have to say
I'm
that
pretty
neither
sure
of those
we've
two
slept
are,
together at an Archon or two before.
Neither of these two are very hairy.
No, I'm not hairy at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to Gen Con now.
Yep.
All right. There's no rules at Gen Con.
I'm not going to be able to sleep for days.
Dan, do you have the picture from Icon?
Chris, yes. I'm sad.
Put that in the show notes.
All right. Now let's bring some order to this chaos. Mm-hmm. Who wants to tell the first bedtime story?
I have 2 bedtime stories.
All right, Chad, you go ahead and tell one of your first, then I'm going to tell the handcuff story.
Do I have to tell them in this sort of like volume voice that you're using? Or
no,
I tell it.
No, no.
Since Pat and I have not participated, when you tell the stories, we are to not interrupt. Is that correct?
Yeah. What are the ground rules
you
of
can
this? I've never even listened to one.
No substantial plot derailment. Just make fun of him lightly and let him continue.
Yes, precisely. Okay. Let the story continue. Don't derail the story.
You can ask questions.
No frustrating, annoying amounts of crosstalk like we've done for the first 5 minutes of this show.
Can I fart?
Yes, you may fart. So, all right. So, Chad, go ahead and tell your first bedtime story.
Yes, Valium voice. Okay. This is a story that I titled Cornbread.
That's it. Done. That's all I wanted.
Probably could stop there. No, you know, Chad, actually, I'm going to make you tell a different story. The one you were telling at dinner.
No, that's just a movie plot.
Oh, no. I want to hear cornbread now.
All right, fine. Tell the cornbread story.
And just in case people are wondering, they can look it up on IMDb. I was telling them about how I am watching with a friend of mine at work Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song by Marvin Van Peebles, Mario Van Peebles' father. And then I have Badass that I'm going to watch after.
All right, fine.
So you can look all that up on Wikipedia and get the exact same story I told them. So, this is a story I'm calling Cornbread. And this was told to me by my uncle, Jerry. And believe it or not, his name is actually Jerry Garcia. But he's not the Jerry Garcia. And
does he wear stupid ties?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He's an uncle of mine. He lives in Indiana, and he's actually a really great guy. He tells these very fabulous stories. He ran a bar for a long time, so I mean, I guess you got to be good with people and good storyteller and stuff. But he was I was visiting there one time. I was the 79th Indianapolis 500. I went down to watch, and I was staying with them, and they took me and stuff. It was really great. So he was telling. I was sitting at his bar one time, and during this time, and he was telling me this story, and he got drafted to go to Vietnam when he was a young man, and he didn't, from my understanding, he didn't actually go over to Vietnam. I could be wrong about that, but anyway, he was telling me this story about how, you know, he lives in rural Indiana, and I'm talking not suburbs, but rural farm fields, one horse towns, and pig farms, and wheat and corn, and far as the eye can see, you know, all that sort of stuff. But he himself never actually lived on a farm, and he hadn't done any of the country stuff, so to speak. He had never been hunting. Every single one of his friends had been hunting because it's Indiana and it's the rural area and stuff. So anyway, he gets drafted to go to Vietnam, and they teach him how to use all kind of weapons and stuff, rifles and pistols and guns and mortars and rocket launchers and all that sort of crazy stuff. And when his tour ends and he comes back home, he says to his friends, he's like, you know, I've never been deer hunting. All my friends have done it, talk about how great it is, and I actually know how to shoot a gun. And you know what? I can shoot a gun really well, because, you know, the army trained me, right. and I, you know, I got practicing and stuff. So I'm going to buy a rifle, and I'm going to get my friends who hunt, and I'm going to get my license and stuff, and we're going to go and we're going to bag a deer. And, you know, I'm really excited about this, pumped, and it's going to be awesome. And so he does, he goes out, he buys this rifle and a big scope and all the ammunition stuff. He gets his license, and his friend said date during deer season, and, you know, he goes out, practice, and make sure he still got it and stuff. And he does. And he's all excited about it. And he goes, and his mother, who I think he was staying with at the time, bakes him some cornbread to take with him. Bakes him some more than that, bakes him food and whatnot, to eat on the way. And he has to get up real, real early to do this. You got to get real early in the morning and before the sun rises. Him and his friends are going to go out into the woods, out in the middle of absolutely nowhere, right? And so he's, you know, they're going through the woods, it's still dark out, and they're kind of going to where they need to go, and they're going through the bush and stuff, and then they start spreading out, and they spread out more, and they spread out more, and after a while, he's looking across this sort of Indiana sort of farm field out of this stand of trees that he's in, and you know, the sun is rising. It's just barely starting to crest the horizon. The sky is just on fire with all these colors, and it's just gorgeous. It's beautiful, right? And he's really tired, so he sits down. He kind of, you know, props up his gun, and he sits down and leans against a tree. And he takes out that cornbread his mother made him, and he starts eating a little bit of it. He's just like, you know, wow, this is really pretty and stuff. You know, there, sun's rising, got this great cornbread, beautiful, beautiful countryside, kind of all alone, just has this sort of moment of zen, right? And he does what any man does when they have a moment of zen. They
falls asleep. And he starts nodding off, and he falls asleep right there sitting with the cornbread. And so, you know, next thing, he doesn't know he fell asleep, and next thing he knows, he feels something on his hand. And he kind of slowly starts opening his eyes, and he sees something kind of nuzzling in his hand, and he doesn't move. And he just opens his eyes, and he rotates his eyes up to the left, and there is the biggest f***ing 10-point buck you have ever seen in your goddamn life eating cornbread out of his hand. And I'm like, oh my God, Uncle Jerry, could you have shot it? And he's like, Chad, I could have f***ing stabbed it. And it's like, holy crap. And he's just, he's not going to move. And it's just sitting there, and it's just eating out of his hands. He says, it's amazing. And this thing is gigantic, right? And this huge rack of horns there and stuff. And this is just glorious animal. And then so he kind of tilts his head a little, gets a little bit better look, and it instantly stops. And it looks up, and it looks him in the eyes. It looks him right in the eyes. And my uncle said, it's like, I stared into his eyes, and he stared into mine. And it's like it went on forever, right? But it was only a few seconds. But it's like he had this connection with this animal.
It was the quickening.
Right? Well, I mean, it was something. But, I mean, it was just like, he said it was the most amazing thing ever. And then instantly, just like that, it was gone. I mean, it just, bam, goes across the horizon. You know, fat, like deers can just disappear like that. They're just so quick. And he's just totally gone. My uncle was just sitting there blinking like, oh my God, you know, did that just happen? And he gets up and he gets his gun and he goes back to where they were camping, and they all tell their stories and stuff when they all meet back together. And then later that night, he goes back home and he puts his gun under his bed and he doesn't touch it ever again. And he says, after that, you know, he's like, I have no problem with hunting. Think hunting's great. People should do it. All that good stuff. He's like, I personally can never hunt again. Once he's like, I can never pull the trigger on a deer, because I will always think of that deer looking me right in the eyes.
Best thing is, once you fed it, it's a pet.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The way he talked about it...
It's not a wild animal anymore. Yeah, it's a pet.
The way he talked... I mean, it was like more than a pet. I mean, it's like...
It's this animal.
Primal... Yeah, I mean, almost it's like this primal thing. To hear him describe it was so cool. But yeah, and he said that, yeah, just like 5 or so years ago, I was cleaning up, found the rifle, and sold it because I never used it, and so yeah,
okay,
that was my story. That was cornbread.
I'm gonna tell
I thought it was a cool story, so I thought I'd share it all with
that
you.
That is a cool story.
I'm gonna tell a story about Barb and the handcuffs. Now,
do I know Barb?
Yes. Barb is not this person's real name.
Okay.
This is a relative of mine.
Jerry Garcia is my relative's real name.
This is not, Barb is not this person's real name. I am changing the name in the interest of protecting, well, I'd say the innocent, but it's actually protecting someone's privacy, because this is a relative of mine. So, I have a particular relative who likes to celebrate off holidays at her place, because all the big ones, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, whatever, we already have pretty long-standing traditions. We go to so-and-so's house to celebrate. Christmas Eve we do with Carla's family. Christmas Day we do at my parents' house. Thanksgiving's done actually at my house with both families together. Blah, blah, blah. So she picks up all the off holidays.
Like what? Columbus Day?
St. Patrick's Day is a particular day in question. So we happen to be over there. We, being my family, happens to be over at Barb's place to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And she got a hold of an Irish cookbook, a real one. Okay, I don't mean like stuff that is suitable to the American palate. These are real Irish recipes.
So recipes that are not suitable to the American palate.
They're boiled
not.
Things.
Some
done.
Potatoes boiled.
Like parsnip cakes and such. I mean, some of this stuff is nasty, okay?
I would totally eat a parsnip cake.
It's actually
parsnips.
Really not that bad. It kind of tastes like a potato cake.
But yeah. Most everything Irish does.
Yeah.
It's potatoes.
So
a little beef.
Here's
boiled.
What's going on.
The English did. Never mind.
Barb is in the kitchen with my mother. And to paint a picture for you, Barb's apartment is shaped something like a U. Okay, and at the top of one side of you is the kitchen.
Who the hell is this Barb person that I know?
I'll tell you some other time. Okay. But going down around the U, you have the kitchen at the top of the view. If you go around, you have the dining room, then kind of at the bottom middle, there's an entry foyer. And then as you work your way back up the other side of the U, there's a living room or family room, whatever you want to call it. And then that ends in two bedrooms and a bathroom. And so Barb is in the kitchen with my mother, and they are preparing the meal. And on the other side of this U, sitting in the living room, is myself, my wife Carla, my brother-in-law Adam, no relation or similarity to the ex-host of the show. His name's Adam Hartz. And Adam's son, my nephew, Eli, is in there with the three of us. Now, Barb has Eli over at her place a lot, so she keeps toys. She's single, so she has two bedrooms.
I know who Barb is.
I know exactly who Barb is.
She has two bedrooms, one that she sleeps in and one that's kind of her office. But Eli is over there enough that she has some toys in this one room for him.
She does.
So as we're sitting...
I don't want to know this, Dan.
So as we're sitting there...
Keep going, Dan. Keep going.
So as we're sitting there...
I'm enjoying this too.
Adam, Carla, and I are sitting there.
You can cut this part out.
I knew her when she was a kid, Dan. She's like a little sister to me.
That sucks when the girls you knew as little bitty awkward kids turn out to be hot because you could never look at them that way. My best friend in high school's little sister is a babe. She's like 22 now. She's stacked, long blonde hair. Can't look at her twice.
Yep. I have the same problem. I have a cousin. She's like 15 times removed, okay?
That's legal, man.
I say I'm hardly related to her, but she's...
I've heard that one before.
Hey, they just have to be third cousins.
It's more than that.
Or for Jerry Lee Lewis. He's famous.
She's like a cousin 15 times removed. Grew up with her, had not seen her in years. Saw her, unfortunately, at a funeral. Damn, she was hot. And, I mean, that's irrelevant because I'm married, but I'm just saying. So,
hey, she's hot, she's hot.
Yeah, it's just a fact.
Sex,
so anyway.
Good luck, dude. You just can't touch.
You just went. I was at 2. You went to 15. The dial only goes to 10.
So we're sitting there. And as I said, Barb happens to keep some toys for Eli in this second bedroom. So he goes back in there, and Carla, Adam, and I are sitting there talking. It's about whatever. And he goes in there, and he comes out with a car. He plays with that for a little bit. And then he goes back in there and comes out with the Thomas the Train thing, and he plays with that for a little bit. Then he goes back in there and comes out with a frog, and he plays with that for a little bit.
I wonder what she does with Thomas the Tank Engine.
Then he goes back in there and comes out with a pair of metal police handcuffs. And, of course, my wit may be dry and obscure, but one thing I will credit myself with is it's generally pretty quick. And so I say to Eli, I'm like, because he comes out with those and we're just dying. And I'm like, take those to grandma, referring to my mom. Take those to grandma. Grandma wants those. And Eli's too, so he doesn't know any better. So he goes running around the apartment going, grandma, 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 and hands her this pair of handcuffs. And my mom goes, what the hell are you doing here?
Why would you dog her out like that, man? That's some cold
Your mom
shit.
Was probably scandalized, man.
Oh.
Barb is not married.
That's
a traditional
cold
lady.
Cold dogging that woman out. Man!
That is cold. Oh,
so what did you say after your mom asked her what she does there?
Oh, nothing. I was in another room. I just sat back and laughed. This story no longer involved me.
You just wound it off and set it in direction and hit go. Gotta love kids.
All right, Pat, moving around the table. It's your turn.
Oh, well, okay. So I've got...
That's fantastic, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. So I'll keep it in the country vibe here, I guess. I actually grew up on a farm. From the time I was born until the time I was about 16 years old, we had some acreage, about 40 acres in sort of the just outside of Springfield. And so I grew up on a farm. We had beef cattle and I did the whole bit. So it was kind of cool because I went to school in the city, but I lived out in the country, so I
can, you've done all the farm stuff.
I have,
like farming and slaughtering a cow, and
I've never slaughtered a cow personally.
Well,
I have delivered calves.
You know, my mom used to talk about that because her grandparents, which would be my great grandparents, mm-hmm. owned a very large farm, mm-hmm. and she used to go out there, and it was, I mean, keep in mind this was 1940s, and small. Well, I say small, big farm out in Illinois. And when it was dinner time, her grandma would just go out into the field, grab a chicken, and with her bare hands just pop its head off. Yeah. And there was dinner.
Yeah. I've never done that. But no, it's like I said, we had cows. So I've done all the cow and, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyway, so we lived on the farm, and my family, like on my mom's side, we have a family reunion every year, and so a lot of them live up in Kansas City. Some of them would come down, and this one, it was my mom's brother, their daughter, obviously my cousin, you know, they would come down and visit us and everything, and I think we were like 3 months apart in age, so uh-huh. it was one of those, you know, contemporary, you know, we were the kids of that generation. And I always hated it whenever she would come down because she's a pain in the ass and she would always get me in trouble. So, you know, she'd come to visit and she'd want to screw around with all my toys. And I had, you know, I grew up in the days of G.I. Joe and Transformers, whatever. And I kept them, and I'm kind of an odd guy, go figure. But for me, toys were like trophies. So I would get these toys and I would play with them a little bit, but then I would set them up like on a shelf and they were like, you know, my prize possessions, so to speak. So, you know, she'd come down and she didn't care about them. She'd just want to play with them, screw them all up. And, you know, it's terrible and everything. So,
yeah, playing with them is screwing them up.
Well, for me, they're like trophies. I'm a collector. I always have been, and I am now. But so anyway, so she'd do that. And I would always get in trouble. And so it was just always the big trouble thing. Well, again, so we lived on a farm. So one of the things that we would do is, you know, we'd go out. And it's funny what city kids think about, you know, about farms and this, that, and the other. They don't really understand the things. Well, so we went out on the, you know, on the property going through the hay fields, the cow, you know, the pasture and everything. And the cows just wander around and they crap all over everything, you know. Well, living on a farm, you actually know more about, you know, cow manure, like, you know, what to avoid and what's okay, you know, in the state of Ostry. So I just, we were out in the fields and I'm not sure exactly, I can't remember exactly how it got started, but I think she, you know, the whole thing was like, I dare you to step on that cow patty, you know, cause you think it's going to be gross. And
this, so I'm the
like,
games you play on a farm.
Well, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Wow. You know, tossing cow pucks. And
I missed nothing.
You know, I don't cow tip because it's a misnomer, but anyway,
yeah.
But, it's a misnomer. Is that like a, beneath a felony?
There you go. Yeah, it's like crimes against gnomes. So we were out in the cow pasture, you know, and, you know, looking for these things. And so there's big dry cow crap on the ground. So I'm like, I'm stepping in it. And, you know, because and she's one of those things where, you know, anything you can do, I can do better. Typical kind of thing. So, you know,
playing manure games.
Well, yeah, I know. She's going to start doing this. So I just started, I would step on the ones that I knew were completely dry. Well, the thing about it is, you know, you'll come to these ones that are like big as a pine, about a couple inches deep. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not to mess with those because those are like, it's just like anything. It dries with a crust and the interior is not dry. So she, came up to one of these, and she's just like, she just ran up to it and jumped like full feet, you know, both feet into the thing. She just got it all over herself, you know? So, and then of course it was my fault, you know, but, you know, I'm the one who always gets in trouble for it. So later
on, boys are bad. Girls are good.
Well, exactly. And she's the manipulative type
with poop.
Yeah, she's the manipulative type that would go back and blame it on me, because obviously I'm the one, you know, that did it. And now for whatever reason, she always tells the story that I pushed her into it, even though it was, you know, on her feet.
And thus forms the basis of family law.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. But so to get back at her though, we also had we had electric fence on the property, you know, because, you know,
like where this is headed.
Yeah. To control.
You're at a disadvantage here as a guy, wherever this story is going.
To control cattle. Well, yeah, I'm on the farm all the time. So I was constantly getting hit by the fence. Cause you know, you basically what you do is when you've got them there, you set them up to where they're about 2 feet or 2.5, 3 feet off the ground. So you just step over them all the time. So you're all the time like getting zapped on your inner thigh because you'll accidentally touch it. And it's uncomfortable, but it doesn't hurt that bad. It's not meant to like shock to kill or obviously, but it's uncomfortable, you know, sort of like getting pinched really hard. So knowing that, I knew how actually I could go up and touch an electric fence and it really wouldn't bother me that much because I was kind of used to it. So getting into the whole dare thing again, I went up to her and, you know, I said, well, I'll touch, you know, I can touch the fence, but I can do it and you can't. So I touched the fence. And then, of course, she has to, you know, best me. So the mistake she made, though, is that when you touch an electric fence, you touch it like with the back of your hand or something. Or like
you
with
don't
a fingertip.
Grab it.
Yeah. Or, you know, like a fingertip because, well, and she didn't do it right. She just went up to it and grabbed it with her hand, you know, grabbed around it with the palm of her hand. And the problem is a lot of people, when they do that, what it does is it locks up the muscles in your hand. And that's exactly what it did. Because, you know, touching electric fence, you do it like you go, you know, bam, you're on it and off it, and then it's no big deal. If you grab onto it and hold on, it's just a continual shock. You know, it's because you're getting hit with an alternating current. So she grabs onto it, and she's like, you know, grabbed onto it with a hand. She just stand there. She's frozen. She's not even moving. She's not even saying anything. She's just holding it in her hand. So then I have to, like, you know, I had to knock her off of the fence. So, and of course I got blamed for that too, but really this isn't so much a story. It's just reminiscing about my, you know, past and dealing with unruly children on a farm.
Okay. So let me just recap real quick. Is your country hick.
Yes.
You're this hayseed who plays manure games in a field and is just flabbergasted and don't understand why when you con a city girl into playing manure games with her, why you get in trouble. And then you are used to touching electric fences. Like, this is something that you do often to build up an immunity to them so that you can trick little girls into touching them so you can tackle them.
Like eating lead chips.
Why you get in trouble.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, the important thing to remember, though, too, is like I said, we're 3 months difference in age. So it's not like I was doing this to like a young kid. It was, you know, a child of my own age. Yeah, she was like 9 and she deserved it.
Yeah, I can proudly say I've never played a manure game in my life.
No, we didn't live on a farm.
I've done some dumb
things.
Did you
use dice?
Yeah. Manure Chad dice. Wouldn't. Yeah, I do diceless manure games, yeah. Chris.
What a roll.
Yep. It's kind of funny, though, because like you said, I did grow up in the country, but I really wasn't like a country hick because I went to school in the city. So I mean,
I think when you play manure games, you're pretty much a hayseed. You are a hick.
Hey,
dude.
That's cool.
Yep. Sorry, dude.
I do like the sort of the dichotomy of it though, because like I said, I find it funny to talk to city people and hear their, you know, their interpretations or their way of thinking about what it's like in the country, like it's this savage land or something. And it's like, you know, you just kind of laugh. And
I think, well, my experience with farms is that you usually have large rolling lands of nothing, farm fields, that either a really, really nice house sits on that is almost better than anything you find in suburbia, or a trailer sits on.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's usually one or two because farming's so boom or bust. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that there's nothing worse than a pig farm, but that's only because I've never been to a goose farm.
No, I guarantee you, there's nothing worse than a pig farm. We, occasionally, when the wind shifts around here, you'll catch whiff of the pig farms, and you don't really want to catch whiff of the pig farms.
One of our neighbors actually he had pigs, and yeah, it's not pretty.
My cousin in Indiana, who is the son of the uncle in the previous story, or the not the handcuff story, but the cornbread story. He graduated, and I went to Indiana to watch his graduation, and of course I was about his same age. I was about a year older than him, and we toured around all of his friends' houses who were graduating, because they were all having parties. And so over the course of the week, I went to all these far rural farm houses, and it was everything from 100-year-old houses to modern, really, really nice houses, to trailers, and everything in between, all in the middle of fields and stuff. And I went, one of them was a pig farm, and the pigs went right up to the house, like as if the thinking of the people. It was one of those 100-year-old, two-story, nice, really nice sort of houses, and it was as if the farmer was thinking, if I have a yard, that's wasted money where I could be raising pigs. And,
well, and another strange thing with pigs too is of all your like farm animals, except for horses, I'd say, like, you know, cattle, goats, anything like that, they stay away from humans. You know, you get near them, they get the hell away from you. Pigs are totally different. They are much more aggressive. They will almost maul you. I mean,
as a pig.
Yeah, they're... Yeah, the pigs are, they're just a different kind of thing.
Chris, you're up to bat.
Is it me?
It's you.
It's you.
Master Blaster runs Bartertown.
Oh, Chris, I have a request. Can you please tell us the story about when you were going across Oklahoma and your wagon threw a wheel?
Well, and then I got dysentery. I don't know. I mean, I'm torn because, you know, it's con season, so I'm tempted to tell the story about my first year going to Gen Con. I'm also tempted to tell a story about an example of me being a fine father and chaperone. I don't know which one you guys want to hear.
I would rather hear father and chaperone.
Father and chaperone.
Now, he doesn't own a shotgun, though. So
this can't be too exciting
of a story. Right.
So this is my oldest son's, Ian, his eighth grade trip. And Ian went to a Catholic school, elementary, middle school. So this was the trip we were going down to. This is when we're still living in Minnesota. And we were going down to the Science Museum down in St. Paul, and there was a couple other things going on there as well that we were going to go check out. So, and the Science Museum is a total tangent. Very interesting, by the way. It's worth going if you can go. All right. So anyway, one of the activities, the trip was run by the 7th and 8th grade teachers, who both were 20-something age women. Okay, so they certainly had their own idea of how a good field trip would go, and I was one of the male chaperones.
The eighth graders agreed.
Well, and I was one of the male chaperones, and then there was this other father who was another male chaperone, but it was basically these two teachers were the female chaperones, and then there was one other mom. So part of the trip was we were just going to do some sightseeing and touring down in downtown Minneapolis. Well, sightseeing and touring to the teachers running the show was shopping. So we get to our rendezvous point, and she basically takes her group of all girls, ironically, and says, okay, we're going to go shopping, and then she disappears. And then and all of them disappear. So basically, it's me and all the boys, including my son. And the other dad, he had to go with his daughter, who basically ran that family. So she's like, Dad, we're going shopping. And so then they had to go shopping. So I'm standing in downtown Minneapolis with about 10 eighth grade boys with absolutely nothing to do. So, all right, well, let's see. What are we going to go do? Well, we try to go to the IDS Tower, which is the tallest building in Minneapolis, to go to the observation deck. Nope. Well, that's...
Two stories.
No, that's actually Duluth, actually. Minneapolis is four. No, but... So we go to the observation tower. Nope, that's closed. It's been converted into office buildings, apparently. All right. So we go to the historical Fache Tower, which is nearby. And that, you could go up to the observation deck, but it's like $10 per person. Well, you know, they didn't have that kind of money. So we certainly weren't going to be doing that. So then we start wandering in downtown Minneapolis. And we end up finding a DVD and music store, like a Musicland or a Sam Goody, that's going out of business. So we basically spend about 45 minutes looking through their clearance bins. So we end up doing our own shopping in a certain sense, but we're all sitting there looking at CDs and other boy-related things.
But it's manly shopping. But it doesn't count as shopping.
So it doesn't really count as shopping. Although a couple people did buy something. So we go from there. We continue just to walk in random directions. And we end up down at the Target Center. We thought, okay, cool, let's go in, let's check out the Target Center. Nope, it's closed. All right. So basically, I'm just leading these boys around these sidewalks, killing time until it's time to rendezvous so we can go to the Mall of America, which is where more shopping was going to happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like some great more shopping.
Yeah, exactly. So this trip's going great. So eventually, we finally meet up. We get to the Mall of America. Again, boom, they all break off to go and do the various shopping things. This isn't so bad because at least there's some decent stores where they can go, but I still have to kind of keep them together as a group. After about an hour or so, they've gone to all the stores they could ever think to go to, and they're bored out of their minds. So the more hormonally charged boy of the group says, "Let's go to Hooters." And I'm like, "Guys, no, no, we can't go to Hooters. Plus, you know, we're going to have to meet up here soon. We can't go to Hooters. And I'm trying to be the good chaperone here. But they're like, "No, no, come on, come on. We just want to go to Hooters. We want to go. Let's go to Hooters. We don't want to go eat. We just want to go get our pictures taken and maybe buy a t-shirt."
Yeah.
So, okay. And a reminder, this is a Catholic school trip. So, all right, fine. All right, let's go.
It's not like
go
they give you a hand job in the bathroom at Hooters. It's just Hooters.
That's true.
What Hooters do you go to?
So anyway, so we take them. So I take them up to the top level there where Hooters is. They all go into Hooters. They all get their pictures taken, you know, with all these women who are at least 10 years their senior, and you know, of course they're in their Hooters girls, so they have all the requisite, you know, props on their bodies,
boobs.
So they get their pictures taken. Some of them buy some T-shirts. There you go. Well. Apparently, the mom who was on the trip didn't really think that was necessarily the best idea to do that. So it starts getting back to me later on that evening that, hey, maybe you guys shouldn't have gone to Hooters. Well, so I go and explain to her. I say, look, they didn't go eat there. You know, I mean, of course, nobody goes to Hooters for wings, but we go there. I said, we just were there. They just wanted to get their pictures taken. Everything was cool. It's nothing, you know, nothing bad happened. It's all
no
fine.
No hand jobs in the bathroom.
No hand jobs in the bathroom. It's all, that it's all good. They all behave themselves. Okay, so that's fine. So that little controversy blows over. We go home. The trip ends. It's over. Everything's fine. Eventually, I move down here, continue on with life. I find out about a year later from my niece, who's maybe only about 6 years younger than I am, and her son was also in the same school, and getting ready for his eighth grade trip, as they had a sit down with the parents, the principal of the school related a story, and she had no idea that I had taken them to Hooters. But the principal of the school then relates a story about how on a previous trip, quote-unquote, one of the chaperones decided to take the boys to Hooters, and that really didn't go over well with a lot of the parents and really wasn't really well looked upon. So, you know, we want to make sure when you go to the Mall of America, let's not have them go to Hooters. Well, of course, we hear, you know, she relates this to us, and I inform her that, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, that was me. So... So I may not have been a hero to many of the parents, but I was a hero to all the boys there. And really, in a certain sense, the teacher, in my opinion, kind of deserved it because she basically abandoned us the way she did, and it wasn't really. Yeah.
And that sounds like an entire field trip where you're going to pause before the field trip to go shopping, and the whole point of the field trip is to go shopping.
I was going
to
say, that's
the lamest field trip ever.
Oh, for well, guys, that's like the girls, like a wet dream for them. It's like, oh my God, a full day of shopping.
And that's exactly what it was. I mean, yeah, sure, they had time at the hotel where they goofed around in the pool and ran around the hallways and whatnot, things that you would normally do. But yeah, that's basically what it was. It was, you had these women running this thing and looked at the field trip really as more of an excuse to hit those shops down in the Twin Cities that they just don't have in Duluth.
Yeah. See, Chris, I'm proud of you because what you started there. You started teaching those kids, those young boys, the man code. That's the only thing you sort of failed with is that, you know, you had to have taught them, you know, the man code that, you know, what happened there at Hooters stays at Hooters. And you don't let it out with everybody else, and there wouldn't have been
well,
any
you know,
problem
exactly.
At all.
That's true because you know only one cracked and said that they had gotten
exactly.
But he was more the mouthy, one of the mouthy kids of the group anyway. So I guess I should have expected that. But yeah, all the rest from they kept quiet about
Man, it. Man, if your always, conspiracy has three one. People in it, someone is a mole.
Yep.
Like, you got to expect it with 10 kids, dude.
Chris,
yes,
I'm going to call what you did a success, and
well,
here's
you.
Why. Anytime you do something
that requires an immediate change to the rules, you have been a success.
You've made them react to you.
Let me give you two examples. When I was a little kid,
hey, I get to tell a story.
Oh, John, do you have a story you'd like to tell?
Yeah, I'd love to tell my story.
Okay,
wait. Let him give his BattleTech example first.
All right, go ahead and talk about BattleTech, Dan.
Oh, actually, we did cause a BattleTech rules change. I'm gonna have to note that.
All right, yeah, we'll come to that after my.
Because no one else on the freaking planet noted it. But here you are. You're putting it on a billboard.
So, actually, we did cause a BattleTech rules change.
No, I want to listen to John's story. All
right. John,
I lived through your stories.
John, tell your story, then I'll come back to my story about forcing rules changes.
So, I was in the Eastern Bloc, and I was drunk.
This is how all good stories begin.
Yep. I was in Athens on about the 25th floor of a big, tall hotel, and we were making a pyramid out of cans of Methos, 16-ounce cans. This is apparently the Greek national beer. And you know how you really don't want to buy things from, like, Bulgaria and Romania? Well, you don't really want to drink Greek beer. It's bad. It doesn't taste good. It makes you sick, but it was really cheap, and all the other option was Heineken, and Heineken tastes like butthole.
Yes.
Trust me.
Hey, you know what their slogan is.
Trust you.
Heineken tastes like Heine.
That's right. It does. I didn't even make that connection, but it's correct.
Heineken does
taste anyway, like
Heine. And there's a reason why they call it Blatz.
So we don't like this beer. And the only thing you do when you don't like how it tastes is drink a whole lot of it so you can't taste it anymore.
Right.
So we were having a power hour. All right. So we're up in this hotel room. We probably have about 200 cans of beer. There's easily 30 of us. We're on this big school-sponsored trip. Dawn was here doing a Fear the Boot episode.
That's right.
Maybe at the exact same time. But, so the power hour goes on, and I'm drunker and drunker, starting to get sick. And I've heard that, like, fire rescue and Coast Guard and emergency response teams are all told that right when a drowning victim or whatever sees that help is in sight, he'll give up and you'll have to go down. Everyone just goes slack right as the light at the end of the tunnel shows up. So it's minute 56 on this power hour and my stomach gives out. Oh. I run out to the balcony. My chin is getting heavy. You've all had the feeling, and you know you're about to give birth to a wad of vomit in seconds. So I look over the balcony.
Preach it, brother. Preach it.
And the most clear moral choice I've ever seen is in front of my eyes. There are two things on the street 20 stories down off this balcony. One of them is a dumpster. The other one is a Rolls Royce. I can see glittering stars on this Rolls Royce like it's a quest objective. Like I'm supposed to just walk up to it and click E, and then I'll get experience points. My most base, instinctual, lizard brain human instinct, cruel and natural and awful as it is to blow up on this Rolls Royce. I know I'll never be caught. I know I'll nail some Eastern Bloc aristocrat's luxury car, cause thousands of rubles of damage or whatever the hell it is.
$5.
Yeah, $5. Monopoly money. Well, my gambling in Poland story also ends in peeing where I'm not supposed to, but I'll tell that next episode. Anyway, I stop. I swear the puke stops for me as I look down. And it's like I'm at a Wing Commander dialogue tree.
The puke's
tree.
Like, oh no, we'll wait.
Yeah,
this is ethics.
It goes to widescreen and there's words on the top and it says, blow it on the car. And then there's words on the bottom that say, no, shuffle two steps to the left and shoot it in the dumpster.
There's another screen that says, do a barrel roll, Fox.
Yeah, no, I wish I would have had some advice from Peppy or something. And well, he did say, use bombs wisely.
That's right.
And Hobbs is in the middle of the screen, frozen, mid-speech, waiting for your choice.
Yes. Well, anyway, I did the right thing after being seriously intent on doing the wrong thing for like 2 seconds. I stepped aside, and I puked in the dumpster, and I went in and finished the power hour. I had, like, 4 more drinks and called it a victory. The pyramid we left that made was staggering. It was... There were probably 50 beers John, in one
I have
pyramid.
To give you props for referring to the lizard mind or the reptilian mind.
Yeah.
Because I made that I've made that reference every so often, and nobody ever knows what I'm talking about.
No, I know what you're talking
about.
So
I have to give you props for even knowing what
this
that is.
This is decades of moral training and even conscious effort to cultivate a habit of virtuous behavior versus that knot of malice that lingers just below all of us, whether we admit it or not. And I'm proud to say that I puked in the dumpster.
It's fantastic.
So that's awesome.
Talking about rules getting changed.
Oh, boy.
Because of things you've done.
This is the we'll put you to sleep part.
No. I got three examples. I think you're going to love at least some of these. The first one does not come from myself or my family. When I was growing up, instead of Boy Scouts, we did something through the YMCA called Indian Guides. And it was very similar.
Sounds racist.
It probably was. But basically, instead of doing Boy Scouts, that you would get together with a group of people to kind of be like a troop. And you would pick a tribe.
Sure, this isn't the Kiwanis?
Yeah, so Kiwanis is something completely
different. Well, that's a church organization.
Yeah, it's not a church organization.
This really? That's the YMCA?
Yes, YMCA. Oh. And you would pick a tribe that you're supposed to represent, and you'd supposed to learn something about that tribe, and they would teach you then, like Boy Scouts, you do good deeds and learn things, and based on that, you get beads or patches, or and you'd make...
You trade your pelts for beads, which are useless.
Yeah, smallpox blankets.
You got patches, and only when you were Weeblos did you get the Weeblo badge, and you put...
Typically, the owners of the YMCA would end up taking your house by the time it was all over, but, you know, whatever. It was
break a treaty it signed with you when you became a Cub Scout.
But every year, we would have a little retreat to a place in Potosi, Missouri, which at the time was called Trout Lodge. And I think it's changed names. And I think actually now it's back to Trout Lodge after going through about 15 name changes. But one of the events they used to do every year was a scavenger hunt. And there was a particular day where then you would stand in line at this table and you would bring all your stuff from the scavenger hunt. And somebody would say, okay, what tribe do you represent? And then they would check off whether you brought the items. And based on that would decide if you're a winner. Well, one of the items on the scavenger hunt this particular year was a snake skin. Okay, so most people are out. This is a huge wooded area around a lake. Some really cool stuff there. They had a great big dam. There was actually a lead mine, an old closed lead mine you could hike to. Really neat stuff. But most people would hike around the trails looking for a shed snake skin.
Not a live snake.
The guy in line in front of us had a pillowcase. If you get where this is headed.
Yes, I do.
And this pillowcase was full. It was not like there was some tiny little thing in there. This pillowcase had something the pillowcase could barely contain.
Holy shit.
And so for years thereafter, they changed the rules so that the snake skin had to not be on a snake. Because this guy brought what was probably a 5-foot snake coiled in a... I don't even know how he caught it. Except to say that at one point earlier in the trip, we saw these guys sitting in a little like pond or a little offshoot of the lake.
You know what? I have to interrupt real quick. I just checked something because I thought so. You went to Trout Lodge, and I went to the summer camp version of Trout Lodge called Camp Lakewood.
Yes, I remember Camp Lakewood.
Yes, they're in the same place, but one is more of like a lodge sort of thing, and one is like a more summer camp.
The other one's like a ghetto.
Well, I mean, it's like cabins in the woods, yeah. Summer camp.
But yes, you are correct. Yes,
I went to Camp Lakewood.
I had forgotten about Camp Lakewood, but yeah,
Trout Lodge is like a hotel.
All right.
So it is a hotel.
And the Scout Ruffin' It cred battles begin.
So there is a rule that for at least a while, I don't know if Catalyst carried it.
It wouldn't be a battle. I was actually...
There was a rule in FASA...
For like 4 years.
There was a rule in FASA Battletech. I've not checked if it's still in Catalyst or not. Regarding cargo in a mech.
Wait, are we still talking about Camp Lake?
No, we've changed topics completely.
Gotcha.
Which... Tex actually caused, because we used to write for Mech Force North America, the fan club for Battletech, before they got in trouble with FASA.
That was a ghetto.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories I could tell there that probably end me in slander suits, even though they're all accurate.
You sly dog, John.
But he came up with the idea of an ejection mech. Because with the Mac, you could have 10 tons of storage on it, and you can make a 10-ton Mac. And so he had an ejection mech, and so they had to amend the rules of Battletech to say
what
that
do you mean an ejection mech? A what mech I mean, that you shot out of another mech?
Yes. Oh, it was a 100-ton mech, but the mech got destroyed. It had a 10-ton cargo bay, and he just wrote in the description that they shared cockpits or whatever. And so there was a 10-ton...
He made a 10-ton mech that was stored within the cargo
so
bay.
So it was like when the Batmobile blew up and a motorcycle shot out.
Exactly. Okay. And the FASA amended the rules of Battletech in every edition thereafter to say you couldn't do that.
I don't understand why existing Star League technology would make that impossible. It seems like their mechanical engineering was quite sufficiently advanced to pull that off.
I don't either. But for some reason, you can pull out a rules compendium, and it's in the
nerds.
Yeah, you guys are total nerds.
I'm a nerd, and I love Battletech, but I just cannot help myself. You guys sound like a bunch of nerds sitting around.
All right, man. I'm totally with
you. Where have you been for the last 160 episodes?
I had a mech that was inside of a mech, and it was so awesome.
You said you had two stories. You're back up to bat again.
What are we on time? I mean, you know,
since it's a bonus episode,
you're not saved by the bell here.
Oh, no. I tell this story.
You're back up to bat.
Hey, you guys have heard this story I'm about to tell before, so I'm just going to bore you guys with it. And bore all the audience.
That's fine. There's lesbian sex in Mass Effect, by the way.
Yeah, it's the entire reason to buy the game. That and elevators.
So, continue.
So, this is a story about how Dawn and I met and got together. This is sort of the story of, you know, you heard Chris's Battletech love letters. Well, this is the story of Dawn and I's, and I don't think there's really anything as romantic and weird about the story as in-character love letters, but
that's a pretty tough comparison.
Yeah.
That's not a shameful thing.
Yeah, I can't compete with that. So but this is all I got. So I'll tell the story. So in 1994, 95, I graduated in 94. My senior year of high school, I was going to a comic book shop. And it was down the street from my high school. It was like less than a quarter mile away. It was very, very close. And I did a lot of skipping school. I did a lot of skipping school. My voice changed. You know,
you were Mr. Wattler.
Sophomore, yes, Mr. Wattler called in for his son a great many times. Because both my parents worked and they both worked career jobs, and I really hated school. So, I didn't show up quite a bit. And anyway, when I would show up, a lot of times I would just leave. And I would actually balance my classes to where I would have, you know, maybe hard stuff in the morning, like classes I had to take seriously in the morning, and total blow-off classes in the evening. Or not in the evening, in the last half of the day. And teachers who were light touches and that sort of thing. So a lot of times I'd go to class, and then I'd blow it off, and I'd leave. And you know, where the hell else am I going to go? I mean, go down to the comic book shop. So this comic book shop, no one is there at noon on a Thursday. No one goes to a comic book shop at 11 a.m., right? They all go after work and or after school and that sort of thing. But the shops are open anyway. So I go there, and there's this guy who runs the shop, and his name is Paul. And we've mentioned him on the show before because Dan and I became really close friends.
I've run into him at Archon, and I don't even know him other than that.
Yeah, yeah. And he and I became really good friends because I would go to the comic book shop, and he was bored out of his skull because he was sitting there running. He owned the shop. He was sitting there running it, and no one would come in that early in the morning except me, and we'd just talk and chat and talk about nerd stuff. Talk about escape mechs and Battletech and things like that. And so, you know, we got closer and closer, and we got our friendship grew out of that. Well, eventually there kind of came this thing where they were a gaming group kind of formed out of that. And one evening I walked in to the comic book shop at night. And this is well after high school, and he had another employee working there. Working for him, which was actually his longtime girlfriend. But I didn't know it was his girlfriend at the time. And so I had never seen this woman before. And so I, I walk into the comic book shop, and I open the door, and I remember my head was down, and I throw the door open, and I'm looking up, and I see this girl behind the counter who is, she has her hands on her face and is reading a comic book. And her, I remember her hair was so long. Dawn had hair all the way down past her butt in those days. And it, this hair was just like cascading off of her onto the counter and kind of falling off of it.
So it's like Crystal Gale, right, Chris?
I was thinking the exact, actually, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, I was about to sing Don't Make My Brown Eyes Blue here, but I didn't want to interrupt.
So I walk in, and the very first thing that crosses my mind when I see this woman,
it's, man, I got to take a dump.
After that is, I wonder if she's going out with anybody, which is actually a really ironic thing to think, because she's going out with my new really close friend who runs the store. And so, you know, I'm kind of talking to her, flirting with her and stuff. And we actually get into this dice fight, which is really weird, because she's later come to find out she's actually very shy and introverted, and she doesn't really talk to people and stuff, but she's kind of talking to me, and we're like throwing dice at each other, and this big dice fight erupts in the
when a shy chick talks to you but nobody else, she wants to hit that.
Yeah, I think so.
Congrats.
Thank you. But unfortunately she was seeing somebody at the time. Yeah. So anyway, I find out eventually that you know, her and Paul are our boyfriend, pretty serious boyfriend, girlfriend. And I have this friendship that kind of happens with Paul. And subsequently, I kind of have this friendship that happens with her. And I find out that they're going together. And I'm like, whoa, you know, hey, let me put it to you this way. We start all seeing each other outside of the comic book shop. And we get this gaming group going. And some more of our friends come into this group. And Dan comes into this gaming group. And I kind of get this notion within me. It's like, hey, I'm kind of falling for this girl. I really like her, but you know what? I don't want to be that guy. And I had to say this to myself. I was actually much like the vomit. You know, do you vomit in the dumpster, vomit on the Rolls Royce? There was this point where this moral choice, everything stopped for just a second, and I was like, whoa, I'm falling for her. But I refuse to be that guy.
John, I still think you made the wrong choice.
Yeah, I do too.
Do you think I made the wrong choice?
All right, well, I'll let you finish your story.
I'm like, I'm not going to come in between, you know, they were together first. He's my friend. She's my friend. I'm not going to do that. You know, we're just all going to be friends. And we played a lot of role-playing games together, and a lot of the stories that Dan and I tell on this show, especially early on in the early episodes, about teen gaming and bad gaming and all that sort of thing, and actually kind of discovering how to do better gaming, come from that gaming group and come from those games and that sort of thing. And as time goes on, I'm falling more and more in love with her. And it's breaking my heart. You know, I can't, I'm not going to have that come in between us, you know, and I'm not going to have come in between those two.
Yeah, you can't really be friends with someone who you want to hit more than anything in the universe.
Well, you know, it's someone that you just absolutely love more than anyone else, to the point of not really being interested in anyone else at all. But you also don't want to be that guy, and you also don't want to be stalker guy. You also don't want to be...
I mean, that's my point. My point is, if I were you, I'd probably just, like, gone away.
Yeah, well, and that choice kind of came up a couple of times. And it's just like, I just need to walk away from this. I just need to walk away from this. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself... I always made other excuses, of course, about friendship and all that sort of thing. But anyway, it kind of, after a while, it kind of became apparent that I had feelings for her, and it was actually becoming apparent that she had some feelings for me. But she was also in this relationship, and Paul actually kind of came up, and he was like, listen, we all know this is going on, but there wasn't anything going on. I don't want to give the impression that we were actually seeing each other or doing anything, because we weren't. And like I said, I was totally hands off. you know, I wasn't going to do that. But anyway, he's like, listen, we need to work this out. And, you know, it's a little bit more intense than that. But he, you know, he's like, we need to work this out. This isn't going to go on. We need to decide, are we going to be all friends or what, or what's going down? And so her and I kind of talk about it for a bit. And I tell her, I'm just like, hey, you know, I love you. That's how it is. I love you. And that's that. But you and him are together, and that's not me, you know? And so I just got to live with that. And she kind of says she has feelings for me too, but she's been with him for so long and she doesn't want to give that up and stuff. And so, you know, that's cool. And some other stuff happens. And then over the course of time, the group splits apart, you know, I don't even think, Dan, was there any one really big, huge fight that split us apart, or did we kind of drift?
No, it was more just one thing after another.
Yeah.
A lot of it was
college, too.
Had nothing to do with the story you're telling. Yeah. So.
And, you know, it's just people in life, and, you know, the friendships kind of, this guy went off here, Dan and I went off to one college, Dan went off to another college, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I remember that I basically dropped out of college at a certain point, and then Dan decided to stop going to college at a certain point. And we both kind of came back to St. Louis, and this gaming group that we had and this friendship that we had was kind of, it just didn't exist anymore. And so, you know, we decided, it's like, hey, let's try and kind of rebuild this. Well, also, Dawn and Paul broke up, and they broke up for reasons. And actually, those reasons didn't have anything to do with me or what happened with any of that. They broke up for their own reasons. And if they ever want to get on the show and talk about it, that's their business. But they broke up while I was away. And so Dan and I are talking, we need to form a gaming group. You know, we're back in St. Louis. We're not going back to college. We're going to be, you know, penniless bums. So let's be penniless bums and game. And we're like, yeah. So we're pulling together this game group. So we're calling up all these people we know, and we call up Paul, and we're like, hey, Paul, we're doing this gaming group. We're doing this other thing. You want to be a part of this? And Paul was like, no, man, no, I'm not interested in that. And then, so we're sitting around and Dan's like, well, what about Dawn? I mean, she's always loved gaming and stuff. And, you know, there's no weirdness anymore. You know, everybody's kind of over that. I thought I had, like, gotten over it. I spent a year in college away from the world, and I spent that time getting her out of my life and getting her out of my heart. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm past her. I'm over her. I don't have that anymore. So, yeah, and they're broken up, and there wouldn't be any weirdness like that anymore. So we called her up, and surprised all of us. She said, yeah. She's like, yeah, I'm looking for a game. Sure, why not? And so we pulled together some other people we know and made a gaming group. And so we started gaming together. Well, months pass, and on the side, Paul and I start becoming friends. That's totally separate from everybody else. And Paul basically is telling me, and, you know, we go out long, late nights at dinners and that sort of thing. And we're talking about life, liberty, everything, right? And right in the middle of dinner, he stops and he looks me right in the eye, and he's like, and we're talking about something totally separate, totally like game nerd stuff. And he looks at me, he's like, you still love her, don't you? And I'm like, oh, what? Me? No, I don't love her. What are you talking about? No, that's all in the past. He's like, no. And we never talked about this, right? And he's like, no, you're still in love with her. And I'm trying to deny it. He's like, dude, her and I aren't together anymore. We broke up. He's like, and it's been like 6 months since we broke up. Go for it. Go have that relationship. Do it. You love her. Do it. You know, there's nothing stopping you. This is ridiculous. You both will be happy. She likes you. You like her. Do it. And he actually does some maneuvering. You know, of course, I deny it and blow it off. He does some maneuvering. He arranges it to where we actually get together. He like lies to me, actually, about where we're going. And he goes and picks her up. And so we kind of go all three of us out because those two were, they were still kind of sort of friends. And it was really odd that he did that, right? But, you know, whatever, he was trying to play matchmaker. He wanted to see both of his friends be happy, I guess. And so, of course, since I'm hanging out with her more, I'm around her more, those old feelings, those old, of love are starting to come back. And I'm trying to deny them because I've spent the past year getting her out of my head. And it's coming back, so I'm trying to fight it, and I don't know what to think, and I'm all confused. You know, I was at an age where things were still confusing. So anyway, I didn't have a car. I was driving around with Dan one night. And Dan and I used to drive around late at night talking about everything under the stars. Basically, the things we talk about on this show and more. And I start relating to my problems about how I think I'm falling for her again. I don't want to fall for her again. I spent all this time saying, no, that's bad. You can't be in love with her. You can't be in love with her. That's bad. That's bad. That's bad. And now I'm feeling this again. And I don't know what to do. And basically Dan laid it out of, is this, does she love you? And I'm like, I think so. I don't know. It's like, do you love her? It's like, yes. And, you know, this is something Dan and I don't get into on the show, but Dan and I are both Christians. And Dan says, do you think this is something that God wants in your life? And I'm like, I don't know. I think he does. You know, because it signs point to yes, everything's coming together. And then he's like, what's stopping you? You know, why are you, go do it. And I'm like, you know, you're absolutely right. I've been stupid about this whole thing. And Dan's like, well, what do you want to do? And this is like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, right? And I'm like, take me to her house. Right now, take me to her house. And Dan's like, okay. And he turns the car around, drives straight to her house. Whole neighborhood's asleep. Everybody's asleep. Whole household's asleep. She's, thank God they live in a one-story house.
You get the boombox and hold it above
your
head.
We sat out front and just laid it on the horn.
Get out here and make me a pie, woman. No, and Dan, at the time, you know, we didn't have cell phones and stuff, and I had like a pager or something, and I gave Dan my pager, and he's like, here, give me your pager. I'm going to drive around. Don't worry about me. Take as long as you need. Take as short a time as you need. Page me. I'll come back and pick you up. And he's like, you do what you got to do. Dan is a real friend. Dan is my best
friend. Dan is a real friend.
Yes.
He's done similar, continue.
So he drives off. I go to the house. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? You know, I got no plan on this. I'm totally winging it. And so I go over to her bedroom. Again, thank God she's on the first floor. So I reach up and I knock on her window. And I'm like, God, I'm going to get shot. So I'm knocking on the window. Yeah. And I see her face kind of like come through the curtains out. And she's like, what, Chad? And I'm like, and she opens the window. She's like, what do you want? I'm like, can we talk about something? And she's like, okay. And so she goes to the front. I meet her on the porch, and we're sitting there on the porch, close the door, and she's in her pajamas and wrapped up in a blanket. And I'm standing there, and this is the most awkward, nervous time I've ever had in my life.
I'm nervous right now listening to it, and I know it ends well.
I am not a person who has a lack of words. And I'm standing there, and my hands are sweaty, and my hands are shaking a little bit. My heart is going a mile a minute, and I can barely even look at her. And I'm like, Dawn, I have to tell you something. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, Dawn, I love you. I have always loved you, and I always will love you. And I look down at her, and because she's sitting there, and her face is in her hands, and she's making these sort of little noises. And I think, oh my God, she's crying. And I'm like, I have just totally blown this thing. and I've made a complete ass of myself, and I just want to run off into the night and never be seen again. And she looks up at me, and tears are streaming down her face, and she has the biggest smile that you've ever seen on a woman. And she looks at me, and she's like, Chad, I love you too. And I've known her for a couple of years now. We've shared nothing greater than just a hug. And we have both had these feelings for each other for years, and for the first time, we kiss. And it's just the most wonderful thing that you could ever have. It's something that I'll remember my whole life.
Chad, that's so beautiful, we can't even make fun of you for it.
Yeah, really, I'm trying to think of a way to rip on you, and I really can't do it, man. That's very touching.
Yeah. All right, so I have to
end this. And touching and short.
So I have to end this on something lighthearted. One of the guys we used to be friends with back in the day was a guy named Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kevin was known for many things. One of which, I was telling these guys at dinner, was Kevin has the most amazing gullet of any man I've ever known.
Oh, yes.
I saw something that if I had not seen, I would not believe. And if you do not believe me telling this now, I can't blame you. Because if I had not been there to watch this with my own two eyes, I would be skeptical of the story. His mom used to go out, and she did a lot of bargain grocery shopping. She brought back, like, soda brand soda, okay? I don't know what it was. It was, like, Vess or something. I don't know what it was. All I know is it was in a 3-liter bottle. And this man reached into his cabinet, took out of there a 3-liter bottle.
Totally unopened.
Totally unopened of, like, club soda or something like that. You know, breaks the cap, so, you know, because, you know, it's hooked up to the little plastic ring or whatever, breaks the cap off, turns it over, and drains it. Puts it to his mouth, turns it upside down, and is gluck, 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 and I just watch it go down inch by inch by inch until this man has drained all 3 liters at once into his stomach.
Dude, after I've heard Chad meet the love of his life, a guy drank a soda one time. This does not resonate with me very much.
Hang on. There's more stories.
I can only hope they'll be that great.
The other great thing about Kevin's house was, like a restaurant, it had a drive-up. Because, you see, I said it was a house. It was actually an apartment. It was a lower-story apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin...
Did you walk up to it at 4 a.m. and knock on the window?
Close.
Better. Better. The apartment that he lived in was on the lower level. And his bedroom, so you had a parking lot and then a little curb that led up onto some grass. And then, you know, you maybe had, I don't know, 5 or 10 yards of grass. And then you come up to the window to his bedroom, which is on the lower floor facing that parking lot.
But I'd say the window was probably about 9 feet off the ground.
And
wow.
It wasn't 9 feet. It was fairly low, because I remember there's two things that we used to do, which was, one, we generally would not call each other in advance. When we wanted to hang out, we had the kind of relationship where we just show up at somebody's house and be like, hey, you want to go do something? And so Tim at the time was the only one of us that had a car. It was a typical high school car. His car probably cost $200. It was a total piece of crap. But he would just drive it up on that lawn right up to Kevin's bedroom window. So the bumper is facing his window, and just lay on the horn until Kevin answered.
And this is an apartment complex.
Wow. And oh, my God.
Failing that, the locks on the window were broken. And so Chad, many times... would simply, we'd go up there And rather than knocking on the front door, because Kevin's mom was not home a lot, and when she was typically in her bedroom, which is on the opposite side of the apartment, Chad would just go up, open the window, it had no screen, climb into the apartment, and ask Kevin what it is. Hey, you want to come out and do something?
I actually had this particular move where I'd stand on the ledge, open the window, and then I'd lift myself in, and I'd do this barrel roll into the apartment.
I'm getting images of Clarissa Explains It All.
Which worked out great until
this Chad got shot by the cops.
Yeah.
This one particular day, we pull up in Tim's POS mobile. Chad gets out. I'm like, hey, go see if Kevin's home. So he goes, opens the window, climbs into the apartment like he always does. And apparently, at this particular moment in time, Kevin was not home, but a whole bunch of their extended family was over visiting.
Oh, God.
And so, not but 3 seconds later, Chad comes flying back out the window. He's like, go, go, go. Dives into Tim's POS mobile. We go flying off.
Oh, my God.
I understand you people had telephone lines when you were younger. I mean, I know there's a few years you've got on me, but Jesus.
Hey, man, I had 2 pagers back then.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, this
what a strange meandering episode it's been.
I know. The previous Fear of the Boot bedtime stories were all pretty straight comedy. This one was more of a mix of comedy and drama, but it was still a fun show to put on. So I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I know we've not done a lot of bonus episodes or interviews lately. We've got a bunch of interviews we're going to try and do at Gen Con, which will trickle out over the next couple months. And then also in a few weeks, I'm hoping to do a repeat of the trivia game episode we did as a bonus episode a while back. We do
maybe
have
like the week I go back so that I'm gone.
No,
and you can
actually
win.
I'm thinking I'm going because I win. I'm the one who does the questions.
Oh, you do? Okay. Never mind.
I do the question.
Carla did them one time, didn't she?
No. Okay. The only time we've only done it once and I did the questions.
All right.
But no, actually I was thinking about doing it at Gen Con.
I hate to tell you this, but I dominated Trivial Pursuit.
I'm sure you do.
But
you guys are just lucky I'm up here and smoke all your asses.
Chris, you're going to have to bring it because I'm thinking we're going to do some
Gen
Con.
Yeah, when they asked us about like Howdy Doody and The Lone Ranger and all the other radio plays you listen to in your 20s.
Radio plays.
I'm sure you'd kick our ass.
That's wireless.
But
thank you, John. Yeah,
I realize, Chris, you're at a disadvantage.
Only in Britain.
Because over Skype, you're at about a quarter to a half second delay. And so I'm thinking we're going to do this trivia show at Gen Con, maybe in front of an audience, maybe not. And we will run that as a bonus episode within the next couple weeks. So
yeah.
I know we've been lax on the bonus interviews, but we are going to pick those up again. And so I hope you guys enjoy.
Hey, we put our damn episode out once a week. How many other shows do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Consistently for 3 years. So anywho, you guys have a great week, and we will catch you on the next episode.
See ya.
And good night.
Night, night.
See ya.
I'm adding on an audio amendment to this episode. This is just me recording by myself a couple days after we recorded the original show, and I'm by myself because, well, it's a couple days later, and they're all gone. As much as I wish we had a compound where we all live, Fear the Boot does not operate that way. So you'll have to bear with me as I monologue through a story. But something just happened to me 2 days ago on Sunday, which I think is worthy of this episode. And I'd rather just go ahead and record it now than holding off on it to Fear the Boot Bedtime Stories 4, by which point I may have forgotten all the details. But Sunday night, I was sitting at home doing some programming stuff for my regular job. And Carla came back from her lamp working society meeting and says, you know, hey, I feel like going out and doing something tonight. Why don't we give John and Kate, which is not John Grant, this is a couple we go to church with, but why don't we give John and Kate a call and see if maybe they want to meet us for dinner tonight? I'm like, sure, yeah, go ahead. So she calls them up and they were actually at church taking care of some stuff. And they said, well, we can meet you after we're done here. But by the way, there's a computer at church in the recording booth, which is having some problems. Would Dan mind coming up and taking a look at it? So I say, sure, no problem. So I hop in my car and I go up to church to take a look at this computer. And Carla was just going to meet us at the restaurant because she wanted to take a shower and change clothes and stuff. And so, you know, no problem. So I go over to church, take a look at the computer, and after a little bit, John comes up and says, you know, why don't we go ahead and go to the restaurant? Because I'd found the problem was going to take me a while to fix, which is what was wrong with computers, really irrelevant to the story. But says, you know, why don't we just go ahead and head on out and we'll meet Carla down at the restaurant. So I say, okay, no problem. I'll shut down this computer and I'll meet you over there. So he goes ahead and heads on down the stairs and heads out to his car, which was parked around the side of the church, to head off to the restaurant. Well, I had parked my car directly in front of the church's main entrance because it was, you know, everything's closing down. I was just there to fix a computer, so I didn't bother using an actual parking spot. I was just parked right by the door. So I go down to the main entrance of the church, and as I'm coming out to go to my car, I look off to my left, and I see by a fence along the church's parking lot, these three individuals who are not members of the church. I came to find out later, at least one of them lives in a neighboring subdivision, but it's a young man and two young women. I wildly guess maybe about younger 20s. And they're talking back and forth fairly loud. I can't really hear what they're saying, but, you know, whatever. It's a pretty low-key area, so I just assume they're just torch playing around. So I go around, unlock my car door with the key, because right now my remote lock's not working. And the way my car is designed, I have 10 seconds before a car alarm goes off. So I typically start the car before I even close the door, put the seatbelt on, just because I don't want the car alarm going off. So I unlock the door, get in my car, start the engine. And right as I start the engine, the two girls come running at me, and one of them is yelling, "Sir, sir." And I kind of, you know, turn and look back. The one in front says, "My boyfriend's going nuts," or something to that effect, and says, "Can you just take me to a gas station so I can call somebody?" And there's a gas station right down the street from the church, and I don't know what's going on here. You know, I have no idea if this is an abusive boyfriend or what's occurring. So kind of deer in headlights, I agree and say, okay. So I start cleaning some books off the back seat, thinking they're both going to get in back. Well, one of them gets in back, the other gets in front and sits down right next to me. And as I'm kind of, you know, getting ready to get out of there, the guy comes running up, also yelling, "Sir, sir," or something like that, and inserts himself between me and the driver's side door of the car. So this guy is no more than 18, 24 inches away from me with like his left arm on the driver's side door and the right arm on the car, like leaning down, looking at me. And he says, "My ex-girlfriend," referring to the girl sitting in the front with me, "stole my phone and I've called the police and they're on their way and I have your license plate." And now I'm even more deer in headlights. I have no idea what's going on. All I know is that now I am in the dead center of three people that are getting pretty worked up. And they kind of argue back and forth for a second. And I say, well, you know, and the girl reiterates, "I just want to go to a gas station." I'm like, "That's fine. I'll just get you to a gas station. Get out from being involved in this." The guy says, "I have your license plate number and the cops are on the way." And I look at him, I said, "Look, I really don't care if you have my license plate number. I mean, what do you want, a medal? I mean, I think I'm getting these two girls away from what may be an abusive guy. I mean, I really don't care. I'm not committing any crime here." You know, he's pretty adamant. So I suggest, okay, fine. I've been on both sides of this. This is what I'm thinking. I've been on both sides of this. I've seen the abusive boyfriend. I've also seen the psycho ex-girlfriend. I don't know what's going on here. So I say, how about this? I'm going to close the door and lock the car doors. So that way the two girls are in the car with me. You can stand outside. If the cops are on their way, I'm thinking they're going to be pulling up any second because he says they've already been called. You stand outside the car, but I'm not going to go anywhere. So that way there's separation. You know, everybody's separated from everybody. There's no violence going to occur here. Cops pull up in a few seconds, at which point I'll kick the two girls out of my car and the cops can sort this out because I have no idea what's going on here. Well, right at this moment, as I'm suggesting, the guy seemed kind of amicable to that, but I hear a phone ring in the ex-girlfriend's purse. Well, he then says to me, "See, she has my phone." Well, she reaches into her purse and takes out a clamshell phone, opens it up, breaks it in half, throws it across my lap at this guy who's standing in the doorway of my car, at which point he repeats, "She just broke my damn phone," and he goes down to pick it up, And the two girls, well, the one in the front seat, then says to me, well, we're not going to involve you in our problems. And the two girls get up and get out of the car and take off across the parking lot. Well, right about this point, the pastor of the church, Bruce, he comes out the front door and he's kind of sees that I'm caught in the middle of something. He actually didn't even know it was me at first because all I saw was the two girls and the guy. But when he sees me kind of get up out of the car, he realizes I'm caught in the middle of something and says, is everything okay? And I'm like, no, would you mind standing here for a second? Just because I have no idea what's going to occur or what they're going to accuse me of. I just don't know what's going on at this point. But like I said, the two girls take off across the parking lot. And it's kind of funny because the whole time this altercation's going on, most people are parked around the side of the church. And I don't think they realized what was going on. But this whole parade of cars of people that I know and I'm close to go driving by and they all smile and wave and, hey, Dan, see you next Sunday. And they take off. And I don't blame them because, like I said, they had no idea what's going on here. For all they knew, these were my friends. But it's just funny because all these people were just driving by, waving and smiling and taking off as I'm sitting here with these people going nuts right in the middle of my car. And so after the girls are gone, I'm left standing there with just this guy and the pastor. And he starts telling us about all the issues he's had with this girl. And they apparently had some history and he was giving her a second chance. And obviously that wasn't working out. And the police still have not shown up. And so he's starting to question if the neighbors ever called him. So he asks if he can borrow my phone to call the police. And I said, that's perfectly fine because you're not the one breaking phones in halves. And there's nothing I'd like more than to have the police present right now. And so I went ahead and put in the key thing to unlock my phone and pass it over to him. And he asked if I knew the number. And I said, I have no idea, dude. Just call 911. I don't know the number for the local police. And so he dials 911 and they pass him around between a jurisdiction or two because it's long story, but there's some questions about exactly where our church is located. And finally, the local county police show up. And at this point, the pastor says, are you OK? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine because the cops are here now. So he goes ahead and leaves and the cops take a statement from me and take a statement from him. And he indicates that he's interested in pressing charges. So I may end up in court as a witness. I'm hoping not, but who knows? And then at that point, you know, once he's with the cops and I've given my statement and everything, I hop in my car and go. It's really one of those situations, though, that tests your ability to think on the fly, because when three people come running at you and before you really even have the presence of mind to respond, suddenly two of them are in the car with you and one of them's in the doorway. And you're now stuck in the middle of the situation and all three of them are within arm's reach of you, obviously agitated. You have no idea if it's going to turn violent. You have no idea if one of them may have a weapon of some kind, and trying to figure out what do you do at this point? You know, you don't know who the bad guy is. You don't know what the truth is. You don't know what's going on. And it's total luck, grace of God, whatever you care to chalk it up to, that it ended as well as it did, where these girls just took off and it turned out this one guy, at least at that moment, was apparently the victim. And it ended as peaceably as it did. I was told this morning by Carla that she got a text from Kate saying that she went by the church this morning and the sign on the church had been rearranged to a bunch of obscenities. And I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out who did it, but I don't know that for sure, so I won't throw that accusation out there too firmly. I guess the only moral of the story I can give is you never know when something is going to come upon you like this, because I think I'm just fixing a computer and going out to dinner, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of this. So always have the presence of mind to figure out what you're going to do in advance, because it's going to happen when you least expect it. So I realize it's not a good story to say goodnight on, but I thought at least it'd be an interesting one, kind of like the drug tree story to pass along. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. And be sure to keep up with the website, because over this coming weekend, we're going to be doing a lot of audio, video, and blog coverage of Gen Con, a bunch of interviews and stuff. So be sure to keep up with feartheboot.com, because there's going to be some stuff we're posting out there as we talk to folks and learn about what's going on in the gaming industry. And we will catch you guys there.